Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up later on the program, we'll hear about the legacy of one of the nation's earliest conservationists, Gifford Pinchot, the first chief of the Forest Service. Plus, we'll talk with National Music Museum Director Cleveland Johnson about an exhibit of instruments once played by Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Muddy Waters, Bob Dylan, and others. But first, it's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining the program today is Kevin Wooster, columnist and reporter with the Rapid City Journal. Kevin, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Carl. Good to be here.
Also with us is Seth Tupper, editor of the Mitchell Daily Republic. And Seth, good to have you on with us as well.
You're welcome.
Well, a few weeks ago, it seemed like U.S. Attorney Brennan Johnson was the favorite for entering the race for the Democratic nomination for his father Tim Johnson's Senate seat. But lately, it seems like Stephanie Herseth-Sandlin is the favorite, or anyway, it seems that way because Herseth-Sandlin has been in the news lately. Is that because she's been talking to reporters after not really saying much about her plans, Kevin?
I think that's part of it. When you talk to reporters, you tend to get your name around a little bit. And I don't know if that was specifically because the draft Brendan movement had kind of gotten attention and she thought it was time to get out there ourselves and kind of leave that option open for her. But I think it's also a question of timing in that we're not all that far away from the 2014 campaign and I think that she would, as she told me last week, owes it both to her employers at Raven in Sioux Falls and to the Democratic Party to make a decision soon, because she's a major player in any race she decides to get in, and that comes with it an obligation to let people know what you're going to do. And so I think there's a time factor there, both for herself and for the Democratic Party and for her employers, that she wants to honor.
Seth Tupper, do you see that it's a question of timing?
I think so. In today's fast news cycle, we kind of lose sight of the fact it wasn't all that long ago that Tim Johnson said he wasn't running. I think Stephanie Herseth-Sandlin wisely before that didn't say anything that I recall. And then, the announcement was made, and so it was only natural after that that she would, if she's at all interested in the seat, that she would pick up her activity and begin talking to some reporters. And I think that's what she's been doing. I take what she's been doing as a kind of an unofficial tour of sorts, where she's able to put statements out, gauge what the response is to that, and then help, and that'll kind of help her make her decision if she's still up in the air about running.
That's my understanding, that because Brendan Johnson is U.S. attorney, he can't talk about his interest in the Senate candidacy, Kevin. Is that correct?
He's in a kind of a tough spot in that regard, because he can't really do much of anything in the position that he's in. And so while he does have somewhat of a public forum with his position that helps him with his name recognition a little bit, it also limits him in how far he can go. So that's probably why the draft Brendan movement has come out, and why it's important to this early part of him going through this decision-making process.
What do you think is going on behind the scenes with the Democrats, particularly the National Democratic Party? Do you think they're pushing one candidate over another, Seth?
I think there's a distinction probably between how people feel in the state versus on the national level of the Democratic Party. I think obviously at the national level, if they're looking to invest any money in this race, or they're looking for a safe bet, as we always would with any of us who are going to put money on something. And I think they see Stephanie Herseth-Sandlin from the national perspective as somebody who's tried and true, who is immediately has name recognition and would run a formidable campaign and could certainly win, and absolutely would win if there's a major slip-up of some kind by a Republican opponent like Mike Rounds. And I think nationally, they probably see Brendan Johnson as an unknown, somebody who has never run for public office, and therefore, may not be as safe a bet, and also has sort of the baggage, the perceived baggage of being his father's son, and maybe there would be criticism there of sort of an anointing of a new senator rather than an actual race. But also, I think from the National Democratic perspective, they look at it and see, if we could get Brendan Johnson to run for the House and Stephanie Herseth-Sandlin to run for the Senate, we then have two very good candidates in a state where some years we don't have any good candidates. So, but I think in South Dakota, there's a different perspective, because obviously Stephanie Herseth-Sandlin has her own baggage from her 2010 race that she lost to Kristi Noem, and some folks within the state, within her own party, who were angry at her for some of the positions she took that they didn't think were maybe Democrat enough. And so I think there's probably an interesting conflict there.
Yeah, Kevin, what sort of machinations or discussions do you think are going on behind the scenes?
Well, this has got to be really complicated because the Democrats don't want a primary, and have not sensed that anybody in the Brendan Johnson camp, if there is such a camp at this point, is afraid of a primary against even somebody as formidable as Stephanie Hirsch-Sandlin. I don't sense that Stephanie Hirsch-Sandlin would run away from such a primary, but obviously she understands that probably wouldn't be good for the party. And what you, of course, run into in any primary is your hardcore sort of extreme groups tend to hold more sway than they would in the general election. So in a Democratic primary, you've got to be concerned, excuse me, about that kind of that really sort of left-wing hardcore Democrat group having a lot of influence that they aren't going to have in the general election. It's going to be a whole different race. And so you have to worry about getting through that and then into the general election where, you know, certainly Stephanie Hirsch-Sandlin's record, while it aggravates some of her base, is a fairly strong record to run on if you're trying to relate to the mainstream South Dakotan, which, you know, I always thought she did pretty well as a legislator. I thought she was pretty close to representing the state, both Democrats and Republicans and the independents. But that didn't always sit very well with her base, and that hurt her the last time around.
Do you think if he doesn't seek the Senate seat that Brendan Johnson would look to the U.S. House instead?
Well, from my point of view, I think that certainly a lot of people in the party would hope he'd run for something because he's a very strong candidate, and they could certainly use a strong candidate given their situation with the lack of elected offices right now. I never got the impression that he was particularly interested in the House, but you never know as all these processes go through how that'll shake out in the end.
Seth Tupper, any thoughts on Johnson seeking the U.S. House instead of Senate?
Well, it certainly wouldn't surprise me if he foregoes a Senate race. I mean, he's a guy that I think obviously is interested in holding political office at some point, and you know those opportunities don't come around every day. And if he's got a chance to run and thinks he could possibly win, I think eventually you've got to take that chance before it gets away from you. So, and as we've talked about already, with all the negotiating and wrangling that's going on within the party, maybe it could shake out that way.
Now, as Kevin mentioned, Stephanie Hirsch-Sandlin faces some criticism from the base of her party that she's not liberal enough. And meanwhile, the one announced Republican candidate for South Dakota Senate seat in 2014, former Governor Mike Rounds, has been getting criticism that he's not conservative enough. And former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee endorsed Rounds last week. Kevin, does that help Rounds with the more conservative wing of his party in South Dakota?
I certainly think it helps him. I don't know how much the Mike Huckabee endorsement matters, but it gives him a position of support from somebody who's seen as a conservative. You know, he's kind of a Fox News darling, and I'm sure they were acquainted well with each other and over their governor's experiences. So it's one of those things I would guess you'll start seeing his campaign line up to try and bring in more of those conservative voices to bolster that part of his campaign, particularly with an eye on that Republican primary in case he does face, you know, a challenge from a more right-wing candidate.
Seth Tupper, do you think the Huckabee and other endorsements will help Mike Rounds with the conservative wing?
I don't think at this stage of the game it's going to make any difference with voters. I mean, we're so far out from any potential primary or the general election that, you know, nobody will remember this by then. But, you know, maybe it would help with fundraising. I mean, obviously, Mike Huckabee is a guy who, for a time, was a legitimate contender for the Republican nomination for president, and probably has a network of backers from both that and his time as governor. And, you know, this is a race for an open Senate seat that's going to be important nationally, and I suppose it's probably important for Mike Rounds to be lining up some friends in high places who can provide some of that cash he'll need to run this race. And maybe there's a benefit there.
Well, turning from the Senate primary speculation, moving to the work that's going on in the U.S. Senate right now, a couple of days ago, U.S. Senate voted to pass a bill allowing states to collect internet sales tax, and both Senators Tim Johnson and John Thune supported that measure. Kevin, if that bill passes the House, what does it mean for South Dakota?
Well, I think, based on what I hear, that it'll be a challenge to pass the House. I think that gang of Republican conservatives over there is, of course, responding to the Grover Norquist groups about this being nothing more than a tax increase, although I think the supporters would argue that it's not a tax increase, it's just finally expanding it to people that should have been paying it before. But it's something that certainly Republican governors have wanted. Ours, from Jankville, Rounds, Dugard, have thought that needed to be done, and those guys are not hardcore tax guys, you know, so it would mean some money here, and it would, if it gets here, I think it could have an impact. But I'm going to be a little surprised if it gets out of the House. But that there's a lot of opposition at points where there are these pinch points in the House votes. I think it's going to run into some problems there.
Seth Tupper, you think it'll have difficulty getting out of the House?
Yeah, I do. But I think passing the Senate was a major step. You know, we've been hearing about this forever. Back when I was interned at the Capitol as a college student and did a journalism internship at the state Capitol, and this was like 1999, they were, one of the first things I covered was a hearing at which they talked about how much money they were losing to because they weren't able to collect online sales taxes. And it's been this long, slow, difficult march to get the issue out there and get supporters for it. And so the fact that it's passed the Senate, I think, is a pretty big deal. But yeah, I do believe it'll have difficulty in the House. But I think this is a no-brainer. You know, just from our standpoint, we've editorialized on this that South Dakota supports itself with sales taxes. Why we would let some company avoid sales taxes just because they sell on the internet instead of on Main Street or whatever? If they're selling to South Dakota customers, you're supposed to collect and pay that sales tax. And it just seems, some people call it a new tax. I think it's tax evasion at a base level is really what's happening. So I think at some point it's the common sense will win out and it will pass. I don't know if that'll happen right now, though.
Has Kristi Noem said anything about what her thoughts are on this bill?
That I'm not aware. Maybe Kevin knows that. Everybody's been so focused on the Senate lately and trying to tease out how John Thune felt about it, because he had been hadn't said much about it leading up to the vote. But I assume she's getting some pressure from the Tea Party side of the party there, and it'll be interesting. I would think that ultimately she would fall in line with what Thune and Johnson said, and this is something that obviously South Dakota needs. But I don't know if Kevin's heard anything about that.
Well, I think she was a co-sponsor in the House, but I think there's, again, I think she may be second thinking some of these things. She's a Norquist tax pledge signer, and those guys work awfully hard and especially have influence in that House. And Noem is always in trying to walk that fine line between engaging with the Tea Party and being considered part of the Tea Party. And I think this is one of those issues that she really has to handle carefully. So at this point, even though she is a co-sponsor, I wouldn't bet one way or the other on how she goes if it makes it to a vote.
I would, if she's listening, she could certainly call in and tell us. I mean, that would be fun. But
yeah. Next Monday, Governor Dennis Dugard will be at the Mall of America in the Twin Cities, part of an effort to recruit workers there to relocate to South Dakota. Seth, how effective is something like that?
Well, I'm not sure, but it is really weird when you first look at it. it seems kind of tacky in a way. Here's our governor going and working the mall, essentially trying to steal businesses and people from Minnesota. I guess that's the cutthroat game that is economic development these days. But it's funny, the last time I went to a Twins game a couple of years ago, right before I got to the stadium, I'm listening to the pregame radio report, and there's this long advertisement about, hey, if you're in Minnesota, you should come over to South Dakota, and we have better business opportunities, et cetera. So we've been waging an aggressive campaign on that for several years, but for a governor to take the action of actually going to the Mall of America and hawking on behalf of the state, I would say that's kind of unprecedented, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. if that's maybe, I think a lot of people maybe would say that's beneath maybe what a governor should do. But on the other hand, he's working hard for the state too. So maybe the results will be the final judge.
Kevin Wooster, is it more or less a way to get some publicity for South Dakota in the Minnesota media?
Well, he's not the best carnival barker we've ever had in the chief executive's office. So there would have been others in the past that maybe would have done a better job with a megaphone on a soapbox. But I hate to give credit to my old podmate, David Montgomery, but I think kind of what he wrote is probably true. This is he's not going to spend very much time at the mall. It's primarily a media gimmick to get some coverage in the Twin Cities, and I imagine that the real benefit they hope will be some headlines and some airtime on some of the major radio and TV stations up there, and just get people to thinking about, hey, the governor came here, he's going to the Mall of America, he's doing this, that's kind of a novel thing, and get them thinking about our state, and you know, you can't buy that kind of publicity cheaply, at least.
The third state lawmaker resigned last week, Sioux Falls Senator Mark Johnston, who's taking a new role as Sanford Health, and Representatives Patty Miller and John Hansen have also announced their resignation. Kevin, how common is it for legislators to resign their positions at the end of a session?
Well, it happens from time to time. It seems like this was a little bit of a string of them in a row that that came along so close together. I think we're all starting to talk about it, and there's been some discussions about, is the process that we use to replace these folks an appropriate one? We've got somebody who knows. We've got a candidate here for the mayor in State Senator Mark Kirkaby, who's running, and he has some time left. So if he were successful with that, he'd be in a situation there where he would have to step down. And so these things happen. Things change, and people move on. Seems like we've had a little flurry of them here that got us talking, but I don't. I mean, I guess I don't see this as too big a deal, and I'm not as concerned maybe as some people are at the way we pick them after the fact. It's not a majority, I think, of the states that allow a governor to pick, but there's a number of them.
Seth, don't think that big a deal, just people moving on with their lives?
Well, I think that's what I heard and read from Mark Johnston when he resigned, and I think he was spot on that we have a citizen legislature and people have other lives outside of being a legislator, and because of that, things are going to come up and they're going to move on, and I think that's just natural and healthy part of our process, is to get people moving in and moving out and fresh perspectives, just part of the process.
Well, Kevin, before we wind up this edition of the Dakota Political Junkies, you mentioned Rapid City's mayor's race. The incumbent is facing a challenger. What are the issues there, and is this a big race, tight race?
Yeah, it's a big deal. I don't think we're a ways away yet from the vote, but it's a mayor that Sam Quaker, who's had some controversy when he was on the council and had a difficult race previously against former Mayor Alan Hanks, and then finally came back the next time around to beat Hanks, and it's his first time up, and with Mark Kirkaby, a state senator, and a well-known person around town, it adds a level of credibility certainly to this challenge. So at this point, these two guys are just now getting started. The next three weeks will really be the key to the campaign, and it's an interesting race because some people think Mayor Quaker has potential to go beyond the mayor's spot here, and if he were to lose, that would be a kind of an important loss. And Mark Kirkaby is sitting as a fairly successful state legislator and had some previous government experience at the local level. And so it's be interesting to see what happens here and if he goes beyond this spot. So it's certainly there's some energy in our town right now, politically speaking.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Sure, it's good to be here.
And Seth, thanks for your time as well.
You bet.
Seth Tupper is editor of the Mitchell Daily Republic, and Kevin Wooster is columnist and reporter with the Rapid City Journal. The Dakota Political Junkies are a regular Wednesday feature of Dakota Midday. I'm Carl Gerke, and you're listening to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Coming up after a short break, we'll hear about the legacy of one of the nation's earliest conservationists, Gifford Pinchot, the first chief of the Forest Service. Plus, we'll talk with National Music Museum director Cleveland Johnson about an exhibit of instruments once played by Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Muddy Waters, Bob Dylan, and others.